Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Hei. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We open today's shiur in the middle of daf kuf hey, at the beginning of the new perek ha'oreg, the 13th perek of maseches Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ho'oreg shloisha chutim b'tchila, one who weaves the beginning of a garment, and he weaves three threads, that constitutes meleches ariga when you're dealing with the beginning of the garment. V'achas al ho'oreg, if you had a fabric already in the process of being woven, and you weave in one thread, then chayev. The Chachomim Omrim, the Chachomim disagree with Rabbi Lezer and say, Bein b'tchila, bein b'sof, whether it's at the very beginning or somewhere in the b'sof, is Tosfos points out, is not literally at the very end, but somewhere during the weaving process. Whether, once again, whether at the beginning or somewhere during the weaving process, Shiro Shnei Chutim, the violation of Shabbos is by weaving in two threads. Ho'oisa shte bote nirin benirin bekirus benapo bekvora ubesal chayav. One who sets up shte bote nirin, we have to make a disclaimer at this point, which applies for a number of lines of Gemara as we go down into the Gemara as well, that this section requires diagrams. We can recommend a couple of good sforum, good books on the topic. There's a sefer called Maisa Oreg, authored by Diane Gukovitsky, and there's a sefer Kuntres Melechos Ariga by Rav Yisrael Pinchas Bodner that has illustrations and descriptions of matters relating to the loom and weaving. In the absence of these illustrations, beyond the realm and abilities of our Gemara Markings Daf Yomi Shir to really provide an accurate explanation. In the meantime, though, we'll glance at Rashi on the Mishnah, Bote Nirin, Shenosan Shnei Chutim Shel Shti Benira Shikorin Litzish. This is a process of setting up a loom where he threads two chutin, two strings of the shti, of the thinner type thread, in the loom apparatus. The term bekirus that the Mishnah mentions is something that the Gemara deals with. Likewise, benapo, a napo is a sifter, which is made by setting up thin strings in a crisscross fashion. So one who sets up two strings that eventually form the mesh work of the napo, and the kvora is a sieve. Ubasal, the sal is a basket that's also of woven material. The sal in particular is not something that is prepared on a loom, and the chiddush here is that even things that are not prepared on a loom nevertheless do lend themselves to this malacha of oisa shte bote nirin. And as we said, oisish de botinirin is the process of setting up the strings of fabric in anticipation of their being woven. The next malocha featured in the Mishnah, hatofer shnei tfiros, one who makes a double stitch, two stitches, or inserts the needle and then inserts it again into another spot on the garment. That would be shtei tfiros. The korea amanas lidfor shtei tfiros. Likewise, one who rips a garment with the anticipation of putting in two stitches afterwards. So the act of korea, of ripping, also constitutes a malacha. The Gemara. Ki also Rabbi Yitzchok Toni Shtayim. When Rabbi Yitzchok came, he taught in Rabbi Lezer, not like we have in our Mishnah, but he taught that one who weaves two strands at the beginning is chayav, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And if you accept Rabbi Yitzchok's approach, it would come out that Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbonin don't disagree with regard to the shiur, the quantity of the beginning of the weaving process. Their machlokus is only what is the din of adding one string to something that's already in the process of being woven, where Rabbi Eliezer is strict and says even for one additional strand one would be chayav. The Gemara asks, but v'ha'anan t'nan shalosh, but in our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is presented as holding one who weaves three strands at the beginning. The Gemara says, lo kashya, there's no disagreement between Rabbi Yitzchok's version and our Mishnah's version. Ha'balimi, ha'biktimi. One version applies to thick strands, and the other applies to thin strands. Amri lo lahaygisa, the amri lo lahaygisa. As far as which source applies to which kind of strings, so we actually have two approaches to this matter, and the Gemara spells it out. Amri lo lahaygisa, some say in this direction. Alimi, when you're dealing with thick strands, tloso lo sasri, tre sasri. If you're dealing with thick strands, only if you weave three strands will it hold. But two thick strands would come apart. So if you're dealing with thick strands, alimi, you would have to weave in three, like our Mishnah suggests. Ktini, but thin strands, tre nami lo sasri, two, will also not come apart. So if you weave two strands together, that will constitute a malacha, and that would be the Rabbi Yitzchok version. The amri lo lahaygisa, and now we'll see this switched around in the other direction. Ketini, thin strands, tlosa yadi, trelo yadi. Three would be noticeable, because they're thin, so you would need more in order to be noticeable. Two wouldn't even be noticeable, so you wouldn't be chayev for weaving two strands. Alimi, thick strands, treinami yadi. Thick, being that they're thick, they'll be noticeable even if you wove two strands. So you would be chayev even for two, like Rabbi Yitzchok's version. So, as you can see, weaving two or weaving three at the outset depends on whether they're thick or thin. What applies to what? So you have these two versions. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source. Ha'oireg shloisha chutim batchila, v'echod al ha'orig chayev, one who weaves three strands at the outset, or adding one to something in the process of being woven, will incur guilt. Whether it's at the beginning or in the middle of the weaving process, the shiur for that would constitute a weaving violation would be by weaving in two strands. Ubesofa shnei chutin berochav gimel boteinirin. If you're dealing with the sofa, this is the edge of a garment. So, by weaving two strands for a width of gimel boteinirin. Gimel boteinirin is a shiur. It's an amount that would constitute a Shabbos violation. Let us glance at the Rashi. Kind of a little bit more than halfway down the page, ubesofa shnei chutim berochav shlosha botei nirin yesh sheorgin soviv habeged sofa. There are those that weave around a garment a border ba'orech habeged kulo min acher. Then this border runs the length of the garment, but it's a different type of thread or fabric than the basic garment. Min acher shel shti. The shti is the thin thread. When you have a loom, you have crisscross threads. They're referred to as the whoop and the wharf. So the thinner string is called the shti. V'rochav berochav habeged kishiur shlosha botei nirin. And the dimension is referred to as the shiur of three batei nirin. Vorig bo shtei chutim, one who weaves into this border two strands with this amount, this distance or length of shnei batei nirin, would be chayav. The Gemara, the source continues, ha lemaze doime, what is this parallel to? Le'oireg tziltzul katan, one who weaves a very fine or thin belt, shnei chutin, berochav gimel batei nirin, that there are clothing items, if you will, a tziltzul katan, a thin belt that has these dimensions. Hence, since we find an article of clothing that has these dimensions, so when it comes to weaving the border onto a piece of fabric, it has significance. Ha'oireg shloisha chutin betchila, v'echod al ha'oreg chayav. Here we have a Tanaic source where there's no name, and it says that one who weaves three strands at the beginning, or one additional string to something that's in the process of being woven, incurs Shabbos guilt. Stama, k'Rebbe Eliezer. There's an unnamed source, but it's in accordance with the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer. Tanya idach, another Tanaic source. Ha'oreg shnei chutim al hagas, the al ho'imro chayav, one who weaves two strands al hagas, is something that's already well into its being woven. And al ho'imro, imro is the beginning of a garment, which basically represents the border. Rashi says al ho'imro, across from here, tchilas habeged she'orgin bo orev mimin achir le'imro. Very similar to what we saw before in the Rashi that described the safa, the border. So if one weaves onto the border of a piece of fabric two strands, he would be chayav. Rabbi Lezer Omer, the source continues, Rabbi Lezer Omer, afilu achas. The even weaving one strand would engender culpability. Ubesafa shnei chutin, berochav shlosha batei nirin chayav. This is a statement we saw just before, that one who weaves along the edge of the garment two strands at a distance of three batei nirin is chayav. Hal lemaze doime, what is this parallel to? La'oreg tziltzul katan shnei chutim al rochav shloisha batei nirin. V'ha'oreg shnei chutin al hagas v'al imro chayav. One who weaves two strands on the gas, or on the imra, is chayav. Here we have that which was reflected at the beginning of this source, and the Gemara points out stamo kerabonon, that this unnamed section conforms to the opinion of the Rabbanon, who placed an emphasis on shnei chutim as being the defining amount for meleches ariga, of course, as opposed to Rabbi Eliezer. Ha'oisa shnei botei nirin v'chulei, my binirin. The Mishnah said, one who makes shnei botei nirin binirin. So what does that mean? Omar Abai, tarti b'botei nira v'chado b'nira. Rashi says, tarti b'botei nira v'chado b'nira, shnei pa'omim markiv l'chut shel shti b'bas nira. You would thread a double strand of thin thread, the shti thread, through the bas nira, which is one of the sections of a loom. The achas benira, Rashi says, upam shlishis markivo al chut hanira shikorin litza hamurkav al hakona. Once again, Rashi is making reference to different parts of the loom, and as we mentioned in our disclaimer before, to really appreciate this, you need to have illustrations. The Gemara continues, Bekirus, the Mishnah had mentioned, one who is oisish shtei botei nirin, Bekirus, my Bekirus, what is meant by Bekirus, Omar Rav, Matsuvisa. And Rashi on this says, Matsuvisa, Birias Garden, this is a reference to a sheet of fabric being woven, Ha'orgin Beregel, which are woven by a foot-apparated loom, V'korin Limish, And this is in place of the kone, which rises and falls in the other type of loom. Rashi is making reference to different types of weaving procedures or processes. V'hatofer shtei tefiros, the Gemara continues. One who makes a double stitch would constitute the prohibition and violation of the melach of sewing. The Gemara asks, why do I need v'hatofer shtei tefiros to be mentioned in our Mishnah ha'tamina bovis melachas? V'hatofer shtei tefiros. This was taught already before on daf ayin gimel omen aleph in the Mishnah that featured the list of 39 ovis melachas. It said there v'hatofer shtei tefiros. So why is it repeated in our Mishnah? Answer, Mishum de Kaboy Lemisna Seifa. The Mishnah had an agenda, and it mainly wanted to teach the Seifa means the end or the continuation of the Mishnah, Vakorea Amanas Lutfor Shtei Tefiros. Because it wanted to feature the Malach of Korea, of tearing, which is evaluated in terms of a tearing, which is in anticipation of a re-sewing double stitch. So Katoni Nami Hatofer. Therefore, it teaches both malachas together. The Gemara asks, "Well, ha'nami tamina bavas malachas, but v'ha'korea is already taught in the avos malachas back on daf ayin gimel. So why do we have this taught in our Mishnah? We have seeming redundancy. We have Haktofer Shtei Tefiros. We have Hakorea. Elo Mishum de Kaboy Lemisna Seifa. The Mishnah here taught these malachos because of that which appears at the continuation of Mishnah, which is found on the top of Omid Beis. Hakorea Bechamosoi Valmeso. Since the Mishnah wants to teach halachos regarding tearing, one who tears in his wrath or over his despondency over the death of a close one, there the Mishnah, as we say, continues teaching laws concerning tearing. Mishum hachi kotoni hatofer shtei tefiros. Therefore, the Mishnah before it, namely our Mishnah, teaches the halacha of sewing and tearing in anticipation of sewing a double stitch. Because it was all as a lead up to tearing out of wrath or out of despondency. V'hakorea menas litfor shtei tefiros, one who tears something in anticipation of making a subsequent stitch, a double stitch, hechi mishkachas lo, where does this come up? What can you describe a situation where you tear in anticipation of re-sewing? The Gemara answers at the top of Omid Beis, the avda ki kista. The Rashi at the top says the avda habeged, where the beged develops kikisto hoileches umiskapeles, where there's a type of pouch or bulge in the fabric, shena beged shove, where the fabric is not smooth, ubolet beged kamin kis, there seems to be a protrusion, a type of pouch, the tzok likro habeged lamato, and as a result of this, in order to straighten out the garment, you have to make a slit in the garment from below, umolel lefonov atfira misyashevis, and you then baste it, and the tefira, the garment, the sewed garment, then let's say readjust itself. But what we're trying to describe here is that if you have a situation where there's a bulge in the fabric, so there is a necessity of ripping it and then re-sewing it to straighten it out. The Mishnah, Hakorea bechamoso valmeso, one who tears out of wrath, or he tears out of despondency over a dead relative, v'chol ha'mekalkalin p'turin, and all other actions that are destructive. If one does them on Shabbos, he will be exempt from Shabbos violation. V'mekalkal amanas l'sakein, one who does what appears to be a destructive act with the intent of fixing something, shi'uro kimasakein, then the shiur, the amount, would be evaluated in terms of how much would be the amount in repairing it. Shiur hamalabein v'amenapetz v'atsoveh v'atoveh, the quantity to be in violation of malabein, which is to whiten a piece of whiten a fabric, or menapetz, what has to do with disentangling it, latsovea dyeing, and tova spinning the well, the fabric, the wool, the strands, kamlo rochav hasit kaful. The term rochav hasit is the space between one's pointer finger and one's middle finger, the amount that you can spread them apart from one another, and then double that amount. That's kamlo rochav hasit kaful. Kaful is doubled. So that amount, that shiur, that distance of thread would engender a Shabbos violation, whether it be malabein or menapet, sovea or tove. Va'oreg shnei chutim, one who weaves two strands, shiuro kimlo hasit. The amount that would be kimlo hasit is the not is what we mentioned before, the gap between two fingers, the second and third fingers. But in this case, with regard to Oreg, it's not doubled, it's just that shiur alone. Rashi, v'oreg shnei chutin shiuro berochav habegen, the shiur in terms of in the width of the garment, kemelo hasit, shafapi shelo orgo alpene kol rochav habegen chayav, even though he didn't weave it along the entire length of the garment, nevertheless, he is chayav. The Gemara. Before we continue with the Gemara itself, we have a Nose Mivne heading on the side, the topic heading combined with structural note. Triangles will appear as we continue in the Gemara. These are tshuvos, these are answers, lahasbir mishnosenu, to explain our Mishnah the Kotoni da Korea al Meso B'Shabbos Potter, the Or Braisa Hasoseres Vamers de Chayav. Basically, what we're trying to do is resolve a contradiction between Tanaic sources, where on the one hand our Mishnah says that one who tears out of wrath on Shabbos is exempt. The Braisa that we will see says that one is guilty. How do we resolve them? So our Gemara, V'raminu, we raise a contradiction. Hakare b'chamoso u'be'evlo v'almeso chayov. One who tears out of wrath. He tears something because he's angry, showing his wrath by tearing something. Or he is in a state of mourning, that or almeso, or because of the death of someone, chayav. V'afalpi shemechalos haShabbos, even though he is in violation of Shabbos, yotza yedei kriya. He has fulfilled the mitzvah, the obligation of tearing. So in the case of, let's say, avelus, someone who experiences the death of a close relative, and there is an obligation to tear upon the death of that relative. So the source says that even though he is not to do that tearing on Shabbos, if he does, he's fulfilled his obligation to do the kriya, the tearing. Our problem right now is that in our Mishnah we said korea b'chamoso is potter, and here it says korea b'chamoso is chayav. Lo kashya, we resolve. Actually, we have to just correct ourselves for a moment. The Mishnah mentioned what we mentioned is accurate, but it's not the right issue at this point in the Gemara. Later, the Gemara will deal with what we just mentioned, the seeming contradiction in regard to tearing out of wrath. However, let's go back to the tearing over the dead, almeso. Our Mishnah says if one tears over the death of someone, he's exempt. And in this source, it says if one tears over the death of a of meso, he is guilty. So the Gemara answers with the first triangle that we see, lo kashya, ha b'meis didei, ha b'meis d'almo. The brisa that says chayav, that's it's over his own relative that's dead, died. Didei means his own. That's his own deceased. Since there is an obligation to tear over the death of a close relative, so it's considered misakin. It's considered a constructive activity, this tearing. He's fulfilling a mitzvah. Therefore, since it's considered constructive in that sense, he is chayav.
the Mishnah that says Korea al Meso is Potter, that's a Mace Yama. It's some someone he tore because of the death of someone that's not his relative. The Gemara asks V'hom Meso Katani, but in the Mishnah it says his deceased, meaning his relative. So how can you say that the Mishnah's exemption is talking about Mace Yama when the Mishnah makes reference to Meso, his own deceased? The Gemara answers, Le'olam b'meis didei. The Mishnah is also talking about a relative. However, u'bahanoch d'lav b'nei avelus ninu. There are relatives that one is not expected to show signs of mourning over them. So it's meis. The word meiso means his relative that died, but not one that he is obligated to tear over. And as a result of that, the Mishnah says he is exempt because he tore under circumstances that he didn't have to tear. That's a mere destructive act, and therefore he is exempt. The Gemara asks, "Ve'i chacham hu, if the dead person in the Mishnah was a scholar, chiyuvei mechayev, he would be obligated to tear." And the question then arises, why would the Mishnah say he's potter? Desanyo, the Tanaic source, points out the significance of tearing in the case of the death of a chacham. Chacham shemeis, if a scholar dies, a Torah scholar dies, we skip the bracketed section, the rest of this line, for a moment. Hakol kikrovov, everyone, the whole community is like his relative. Hakol kurinolov, hakol chotzinolov, hakol mavrinolov, borachava. Everyone must tear because of his death. Everyone must chotzin is an act of exposing one's shoulder, which was a practice that was in vogue in the time of the Gemara. Today we don't find this practice, but chalitzas kosef, the exposure of one's shoulder, was something that was practiced in the time of the Gemara. And mavrin, hakol mavrin, is the first meal that a mourner eats after the burial of the deceased. So the mourner eats from food that is provided by the community and not from his own food. So if a scholar dies, so everyone must adopt that practice and not eat from their own food at the first meal after the burial. And the rechova is the public square. That's where this meal was eaten. The point right now is that if the Mishnah is speaking about a deceased but not his own relative, but if the person featured in the Mishnah that died was a chacham, there is a tearing obligation, as we see in this source. And if that be the case, so you can't say he would be potter like the Mishnah says. There was a line that we skipped, and we skipped it quite deliberately so as to preserve the smooth reading like we just did. In the bracketed section, and the note on the side of our Gemara indicates that these brackets and the brackets that follow in the next source are for initial skipping purposes, and it's because the terminology, the phraseology contained within the bracketed section is problematic, and the Gemara fixes it. We simply read the fixed version. Let's now read the source again with the bracketed section. Chacham Shemeis, Hakol Krovov. Everyone is his relative. So the Gemara asks in Bitmiha, Hakol Krovov Salkadaitoch. What, everyone is his relative? That's not true. Elo Emo Hakol Kikrovov. Everyone, the community, is like his relative. And just like relatives practice tearing, so the community has to tear. Hakol Kurinolov. Everyone tears over the death of the Chacham. Hakol Chotzinolov. Hakol Mavrinolov Borachava. So what's the story with our Mishnah that says one who tears over Meso is Potter? Lo Tzricha, Delav Chacham Hu. The deceased featured in the Mishnah is someone that was not a chacham. He's not a sage. Question, V'i Adam Kosher Hu Chiyuvei Mechayev. The question that the Gemara presents here is a long question. You'll notice we have a long question marking. The kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of Gemara text with the descending vertical dashed line shows you the length of the question. So if the person in the Mishnah that died was a kosher individual means he was a person that observed the Torah and its mitzvos. Chiyuvim mechayev, one is obligated to tear because of his death as well. Desanya, mitneima mesim bonov uvnoisov shel odom kishen kitanim. Why is it that children die when they are young? Mipnei, we're skipping the brackets, and you can see we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the vertical dash dotted line. So in the question that the Raisa raises, why do children die when they're young? Mipnei shelo bocha v'sabel al odom kosher. Because their father did not express his remorse and mourning over the death of a kosher person. Shekola becha al adam kosher, one who does cry and mourn over the death of a kosher, proper individual, mochalin lo al kol avonosov b'shul kavod shasalo. He is forgiven for his sins because of the honor that he showed the deceased. The point is, we see here that the death of an adam kosher is also grounds for showing signs of mourning, including tearing. So why would he be exempt, as the Mishnah says, if he is expected to tear over the death of an Adam Kosher? Now, as we mentioned before, we skipped a couple lines, because that which is contained therein, within the brackets, is not accurate. So let's now read the source from the beginning, with the bracketed section. It says in this source, why does a person's children, daughters, sons and daughters die when they're young? So as to motivate him to cry and mourn over the death of a proper person. So the Gemara asks, again in wonderment, so as to make sure that a person cries, oh, ervona shakli minei, that we take collateral from him before he has even sinned. In other words, we take away a person's children in order to ensure that this person will cry and mourn in the event that an Olam Kosher dies. That's very unreasonable. Elo, rather, as far as why does a person's children die when they're young, it's mitnei shelo bocha, because he already sinned. He didn't cry and didn't mourn over the death of an Olam Kosher. Once again, the point being is that our Mishnah mentions one who's Koreal Meso, that he is exempt, but why should he be exempt? Even if he is not a close relative, and even if he is not a Chacham, maybe he was an Adam Kosher, and that's good enough reason for tearing, and if it's a good reason to tear, he wouldn't be Potter, because the tearing is not a destructive activity. Lo Tzricha Delav Adam Kosher Hu. The Gemara answers that the Mishnah is talking about a case of the death of a person that was not kosher. Question: if you are standing at the point of life departure, it means at the moment of death, next to a person, even if he's not an Adam kosher, you're still obligated to tear. Desanya, Rabbi Lezer, Rav Shimon Lezer Omer, Ha'oi Meid Al, Hames B'Shas, Yitzias, Neshama, one who stands by a person as his soul departs, Chayev Likra, Ha Lemaze Deima L'Sefer Torah Shenisrafa. The departure of the soul of a person is no less than the travesty of the burning of a Sefer Torah. And that is one who is witness to the burning of a Sefer Torah, he is obligated to tear his garment. Likewise, one who stands by the bedside of a person at the moment of death, he is obligated to tear over that event, even if the person is not an Adam Kosher. So why does the Mishnah say that tearing al meso is exempt? Lo tzricha, the case of the Mishnah is delo koi, b'shas yitzias neshama. He's simply not there at the time of death of this person who is albeit he's a relative, but he is not an Olam Kosher. He is also, we know, he's not a Talmud Chacham, and that's why he is exempt. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form, a trapezoid form, which will appear in alternating directions. On the side of the Gemara, there were no say, mivne heading, we feature the trapezoid and we indicate ma'akav, an attempt to keep track.
with the narrow part facing upwards, these are kushios, questions, and with the narrow facing down, tshuvos, responses. And the point of this Gemara is leyashev stira ben shnei mekoros binyan akore b'chamoso ipoter o chayav. We're going to try to resolve what appears to be a contradiction between two sources concerning a person who tears out of wrath. Is he exempt, or is he exempt from Shabbos violation, or is he guilty as violating Shabbos? The Gemara, Tainach Meso. Granted, we as far as Meso is concerned, we resolved the contradiction between our Mishnah and the source before. Elo Chamoso, Achamoso Kasha. We have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You align this with the arrows you see above. So you see two arrows above. One is pointing to the very top line of the Gemara, where it says Hakorei b'chamoso, that of the top line, namely of the page, which was in the Mishnah, which said Hakorei b'chamoso was potter. Then we have our second arrow on the page facing a source that says Hakorei b'chamoso, but in that source it said chayav. So chamoso chamoso kashi, we have a contradiction regarding tearing in a state of wrath, or tearing out of wrath. So the Gemara answers, and you notice how the trapezoid flips over here. Chamoso chamoso nami lo kashi, as far as tearing out of wrath, there is no contradiction. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Shimon. The two sources represent two different Tanaic opinions. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, the source that says chayav, this is in accordance with the Yehuda, the Amar Melacha She'ein Tzricha Legufa Chayav Olel, that a Melacha action, a Melacha activity that is done for a purpose other than its designed purpose. And when we say designed purpose, we mean it was the Melacha was done for some reason other than that which it was designed for in the Mishkan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the emphasis is on the action and not necessarily the purpose you had in mind. So as a result of the emphasis on the action, one will be chayav. Ha, Rabbi Shimon, the source that says Koreh b'chamoso is exempt, is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. The Omer Melocha She'en Tzricha Legufa Potter Olel. One has to think of the act of tearing. Why was it done in the Mishkan? It was done in the Mishkan for constructive purposes. There was we've learned before why they would tear in the Mishkan, but that was for constructive purposes. One who tears out of wrath, is that's not a constructive purpose, and therefore it's classified as it's the act of tearing. It's a malacha, but it's ein tzricha legufa. It's done for some reason other than that which it was designed for in the Mishkan. The Gemara continues. Question: Amar d'shamisle the Rabbi Yehuda b'masakein. Rabbi Yehuda has his shita of melacha shein tzricha legufa. That's when the action that's done is of a constructive nature. Ben makafil mi shamisle, but something that's of a destructive nature, would Rabbi Yehuda would say he is chayav? And here, what are we talking about? We're talking about someone who is overcome with wrath, and he tears at some type of emotional reaction to his wrath, so he tears. Basically, it's a destructive activity. So even Rabbi Yehuda would not say chayav. So what are we left to answer or have to explain the source that says Koreh b'chamoso is chayav? Omar Rabbi Ovin, hi Nami, and you'll notice that we're answering this question. The flipped over trapezoid indicates a response. So he says, hi Nami, the case of Koreh b'chamoso misakin hu. It really is a constructive activity. To ka'ovid nachas ruach liyitzro. He is assuaging his own temper. By venting his wrath on the garment, through tearing the garment, so he's making himself feel better. So that's called nachas ruach liyitzro. And as such, it can be classified as something that's constructive, not destructive. The Gemara asks a question, and you'll notice it's a long question. The kuf you can see that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with the descending vertical dashed line shows you the length of the question. Uchehai gavno mishori, is wrath
it was the tearing of a garment out of wrath, something that is allowed. It's not something that's allowed. It's forbidden to behave that way. And since it's forbidden to behave that way, it is not to be classified as misakin. It's not constructive. So the Gemara continues with its question. The Hotanya, have we not learned in the following source, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mishum Chilfa bar Agra, Shomer Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chilfa bar Agra is a name who quoted Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Hamekarea begodov bechamasa, one who tears his garments out of temper, out of wrath. V'mishaber kelu b'chamoso, one who breaks vessels in his wrath. V'mafazir mo'isa b'chamoso, one who scatters money in wrath. Yehei beinecha k'ivet avodah zarah, he should appear in your eyes as an idol worshiper. Shikach umnaso shel yetzahara, thusly is the artistry, the technique of the evil inclination. Hayom omer lo aseikach, today he tells you do this. Ulamochar omer lo aseikach, and tomorrow he tells you do that. Ad sheomer lo avod avodah zarah, until he finally gets you to where he wanted to get you to serve idols. V'holech v'oved, and you go ahead and listen to the evil inclination, go worship. Omer Rabbi Yovan Maikra, and what is the pasuk that indicates this, that the evil inclination is goal is to get you to serve idols? The pasuk says, "Lo ye b'cho el zar, v'lo sishtachave li el nechar." Esu el zar shish begufa shaladam. The pasuk says, if you read it literally, it says, "There shall not be within you a strange or foreign god." What kind of foreign god is there inside a person's body? Heve omer ze yetzahara. This is the evil inclination. And in this pasuk it says, don't allow the evil inclination to rule over you, because otherwise he will lead you to do avodah, to serve idols, to bow down to idols. So after all is said and done, one who behaves in a wrathful fashion, he is someone who is allowing his evil inclination to get the better of him, and it is forbidden to allow the evil inclination to get the better of you, and therefore you can't say that one who tears out of wrath, even though it may placate his temper, nevertheless, since it's something forbidden, it can't be called misakin, it can't be called something constructive. So what are the circumstances of tearing out of wrath that we saw in the Tanaic source before that said he was chayav? Lo tzricha, de ka'ovid lemirmo emsa a'inshi besi. You have a situation where a person has to, set his foot down or impose a moderate state of fear on the members of his household. At times in life, such a thing is necessary, so as to shock the enshebese into realizing that who is the boss. So he might do an act like this. He might tear something to shock them into realizing that, and that's imposing a moderate state of fear in the hearts of his household. So if he does thusly, that's not mekalkel, it's a tearing with a clear purpose in mind, a necessary purpose, and that's why if he tears in order to impose this fear, which the Mishnah refers to as kareb chamaso, that is misakein, and that's why if he does it on Shabbos, he would be chayev. And we have some examples of actions done by different rabbinic figures to impose their fear on their households. Kiha, Rav Yehuda, Shalif Matzvaisa. Rav Yehuda would slip out or rip out of a garment some of the Matzvaisa. These are possibly strands of a garment. Rav Acha Bar Yankiv Tovar Moni Tviri. Rav Acha would break vessels that were already broken. He would smash vessels, but not good vessels, smash broken vessels. Rav Sheshes Romilei La'amse Munini Aresha. Rav Sheshes apparently had to impose his authority on his maidservant, so he poured fish brine over her head. Rav Abba Tavar Naksimo. Rav Abba, in imposing his fear on his household, he broke a lid, a covering of a vessel. Omar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapora. Before we go further, on the side of our Gemara, we have a note, the topic heading, Hashivus Bechi Umispeit Al Haniftar. The Gemara shows, makes mention of the importance of crying and eulogizing the deceased. So the following is said in the name of Bar Kapara, Kol Hamuri Demolos Al Odom Kosher, one who sheds tears over the death of a proper individual, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sofron, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, counts them, U Manichon Beveis Genozov, and stores them in his treasury. Shenemar, Nodi, Sofarta, Osa, Simo Dimosi Benodecho, Halo Besifrosecha. Rashi points out the word Nodi is from the expression in Sefer E of Lanud Lo. Lanud is to a type of swaying or nodding in commiseration with someone who experienced a loss. So it's we'll call it an act of mournfulness. And in this pasuk, you see, Simo Dimosi Benodecho, he puts, the Almighty puts one's tears in a flask, and they are counted. Omar, the Gemara continues, Omar Buda, Omar Rav, and we have a diamond marking on the side of our Gemara under the Mivneh heading. We've noted that the word kol appears in a diamond, kol hamas atzel, there's a phrase in the Gemara, anyone who demonstrates laziness over the participating in a eulogy over a chacham, or eulogizing a sage. These are memros al hamas atzel behespedes shel chacham, comments made regarding someone who is lazy with regard to eulogizing a sage. Later in the Gemara, we'll see a double underline appearing. This marking is to highlight memros shel Reb Chiya bar Ovin b'shmo shel Reb Yochanan, comments made by Reb Chiya in the name of Yochanan b'inyan hesped, in the context of eulogies, u misosam shel anoshim krovim, and also with regard to the death of near ones. Now the Gemara. So Omar Yehuda Marav, kol hames atzel b'spedo shel chacham, anyone who demonstrates laziness in the context of the eulogy of a chacham. From the Gemara itself, it's not 100% clear, is it a function of laziness in attending the hesped, the eulogy, or is it laziness in actual eulogizing? So without committing ourselves, one who demonstrates laziness in the context of eulogizing a sage, roi lekovro b'chayav, someone like that deserves to be buried alive. Shinemar, it says regarding Yehoshua, the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu, upon his death, it says vayikbur oso b'gvul nachlosu b'tim naserach asher b'har Ephraim. Yehoshua was buried in that location, mitzafon lahar gash, north of Har Gash. What do we make out of this pasuk? Malamed, the expression at the end of this pasuk, Lahar Gash, teaches Shirogash Aleim Har Lahor Gon. There was an attempt to lift a mountain over their heads to kill them. Very simply because, as Rashi says, Shalos Bilakroi, Yehoshua did not receive the eulogy befitting him. In other words, he may have been eulogized, but not in a way befitting him. So the nation that was guilty of not providing a proper eulogy, they deserve to be buried alive. The Gemara continues, Om Rav Chiya bar Abba, Om Rav Yochanan, kol hames atzel b'espedo shel chacham, eino ma'arich yomim, one who is lazy with regard to the eulogizing of a sage will not have a long life. Mida k'negen mida. Shenemar b'sasa b'shachat riveno. The pasuk that's quoted here, b'sasa, so that means, for our purposes, it means measure for measure. So that this pasuk is quoted to show that is the way the Almighty judges the world. Namely, someone who himself is not mourning the taking away of the or the end of the life of the Chacham. So since the end of the Chacham's life doesn't seem to concern this individual, so to his own end of life is of no concern. Rashi says, Mido kenegen mido, hu lo nisabil al shenisgatsri yumei a Chacham. He didn't express any mournfulness over the shortening of the life of the sage. Af l'chayav lo yochushim min ha-shamayim. So to regarding his life, they will not have mercy from heaven. The Gemara continues, and here the question is focused on what we just said about Yoshua, that he didn't receive a proper eulogy. Eisvei Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, the Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya challenges that, which, first, by the way, Rabbi Chiya quoted Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Rabbi Chiya, after quoting him, challenges what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan pointed out that anyone who is misatzel b'hesped shechacham, so he doesn't deserve a long life. So the issue right now, not like we said a moment before, that we're focusing on Yoshua, but more accurately, we're focusing on Rabbi Yochanan's comment that one who is lazy with regard to eulogizing a chacham, he doesn't have long life. And we actually ask a question as follows: Eisvei Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, the Rabbi Yochanan, Vayavdu ha'om es Hashem kol yemei Yoshua, v'chol yemei hazikenim asher herichu yomim acharei Yoshua. So this pasuk mentions that the zikenim, the leaders, the sages that lived after Yoshua, lived herichu yomim. They lived long lives. So how can you tell me before that that for the lack of a proper hesped for a chacham, which we saw it was in fact the case by Yehoshua, when the very people that survived or lived after Yeshua had long lives, the very same people that you said were guilty of not providing a proper eulogy. Omar Lay, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Bavloi, you from Babylonian, we know that Rabbi Chiya bar Abba came from Bavel. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you Babylonian, Yomim Herichu, Shonim Lo Herichu. What I originally said remains true, that one who is not maspid chacham properly, so he won't have long years. That's shonim lo herichu. The pasuk says herichu yomim. Granted, they had long days. Now, long days means, Rashi explains that they, at the end of their lives, they were living well. They had a good life, but it doesn't mean they had a life of longevity. That's not what is indicated by the pasuk. So my original teaching stands. If one does not properly eulogize a chacham, so he won't have longevity. Ah, the pasuk here says herichu yomim. Granted, that means they had a good life, but it doesn't mean that they had a long life. The Gemara asks, Elo me'ata, if you're going to darshan the pasuk that we said hasher herichu yomim, the word yomim is exclusionary of shanim, so what about this pasuk? And we say this as part of the Kriya Shema, that if one keeps the mitzvos of Hashem, it says, leman yirbu yameichem v'yimei b'neichem, in order that you shall have long yameichem. Well, so yomim v'lo shanim mean long days, meaning a good life, but v'lo shanim, but not longevity. Obviously, if the pasuk says, leman yirbu yameichem, yameichem means longevity as well. So the Gemara says, "Brocha shayni," when the spirit of the pasuk is to give a blessing. So the word yomim does mean longevity. It in fact means, it's the equivalent of saying shonim. However, if the pasuk is not a pasuk of blessing, simply it's a descriptive pasuk, like the pasuk that we had three lines from the bottom, "Azkinim asher herichu yomim," there we are able to darshan it yomim velo shonim. We have a little house marking which emphasizes the word echad. There are two cases featured here: echad mino achim and echad mibnei hachabura. So another comment of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan is echad mino achim shemes. One of the brothers died. Yidagu kolach and kula basically mean that if a member of a family dies,
the entire family should be worried. Rashi at the top says, Yidagu yiru min hamisa. They should fear possible death. And likewise, echod mibnei chabura shemes, one of a group of people. Chabura is maybe we'll call it a clique or a group of people. Could be a community situation. That's if one member of a close community dies. So tina kol haga chabura kula, the entire group should worry. Now, under what circumstances do we say everyone should worry? So Amri law demes gadol, vi Amri law demes katan. Some say it's when the senior member of the group dies that everyone should worry, and some say it's the opposite, when the junior member of the group dies. Rashi explains, if it's on the top line, demes gadol, yesh lidog, that's reason for fear, hoil v'sholta midas hadin b'rosh habayis. Since the midas hadin, midas hadin is the attribute of judgment it visited upon the senior, the leader of the household. That's a sign that the entire household should worry. And the other approach is the Amri law, the meis cotton, shebekalkola maschilim min hakotan. When it comes to punishment is meted out first to the junior member, and that's based on a Gemara that is in Maseches Brachos. So either way, if it's the senior member or the junior member of the unit featured here, that's reason for the rest of them to start worrying. The continuation of the Gemara deals with the rule of the mission of Kol HaMekalkalin Pturin, but in the context of our Daf Yomi Shur, we will pause and with that conclude our Shur for today.